On to the regular meeting of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency Board of Directors for October 3, 2023. And with that, I would like to call the meeting to order. And I'd like to ask Director Armitage if she would lead us in the pledge tonight.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Director Armitage. We now have our announcements for tonight's meeting. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the board using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public, using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. We do have members of the public present tonight, so I'd like to remind those in attendance that there are public comment cards in the lobby. Please fill one out to help facilitate the public comment process. The procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from board members. Please raise your hand. Once concluded, I will ask for a motion and a second. After any further discussion, the board secretary will call for roll call votes. All directors are present for tonight's meeting, except Directors Colley and Cooper. We now will continue with the agenda as published. Item 3, public comments. Members of the public may comment as to items within the subject matter jurisdiction of the agency that are not on the agenda at this time. We ask that members of the public wishing to comment on items that are listed on the agenda do so at the time each item is considered. Members of the public wishing to comment on items covered in closed session may, before they are considered by the board, may do so at this time as well. Are there any members of the public wishing to comment on items not covered in the agenda?
President Martin, we do have somebody online.
Pardon me?
We do have a member of the public online that would like to make a public comment.
To comment on at item 3, right?
I believe so.
All right.
Ms. Kaufman, just give me one moment. Ms. Kaufman, you may begin your public comment.
Thank you, April. Hello, directors and staff. Kindly excuse my confusion, but please indulge me. I virtually attend nearly every single meeting. As usual, at the last meeting, I was seated at my desk, work piling up. But during the previous 4 meetings now, you all seemingly suddenly zipped into a closed session, leaving those of us at home sitting, waiting. I can't concentrate on work during this period of silence, so I just sit and wait. And the meeting before the last one, I waited something like 45 minutes and then back to our public session. But what was remaining for us after all that time? The end of the meeting. Same thing this past meeting. Since your private session cannot allow us outsiders' presence, why are we still there, feeling ignored? We deserve some respect for attending these meetings. Don't make us wait for nothing. Please keep us involved and appreciated. Thank you. That's it.
Thank you for your public comment. Our normal procedure is to have closed session in the latter part of the meeting, as you know. Sometimes we do have them earlier for good reason, so we apologize if you have been inconvenienced, Ms. Kaufman. All right. Any other public comment online, Madam Secretary?
There is not.
Very good. We then can move on to, well, I should ask, are there any public comments with regard to the closed session item?
There is not.
Very good. Item 4, approval of the amended agenda. Are there any changes to the October 3, 2023 amended board agenda from the board? Seeing none, the amended agenda is hereby approved. And tonight is one of those nights where we're going to go into closed session right now. So the board will now be going into closed session. The public may stay on the Zoom webinar. Any board members or staff that are connected to the Zoom meeting and are in closed session, please disconnect from Zoom. We will meet in closed session pertaining to the following item: conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation, significant exposure to litigation pursuant to paragraph 2 of subdivision D of section 54956.9, one case. Members of the public and any staff may stay on the current line. Once closed session is over, the board will reconnect to the Zoom webinar for closed session announcements and to continue the meeting. We are now in closed session. We are now back in open session. I'd like to go to legal counsel for announcement of closed session announcements.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Pardon? Excuse me? Oh. We are waiting for Director Armitage to return. Very good. We are now back in open session. I'd like to pass the item to Mr. Byrne for closed session announcements.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll report that the board did not take any action in closed session.
Thank you very much. Well, we now go to item 5, consent calendar. There are 5 items on the consent calendar tonight. I would entertain any public comment that we might have, April?
There's no public comment.
Very good. I would entertain a motion for approval of the consent calendar. Director Armitage. Motion by Director Armitage.
I'll second.
Second by Vice President Ozahusky. Unless there's further discussion, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
Vice President Ozahusky.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Consent calendar is approved, and that includes resolution numbers SCV-384 and SCV-385.
Very good. Thank you, Board. We move on to item 6, action item for approval, item 6.1. Approve adopting a resolution establishing the Valencia Service Area Retail Capacity Fee. Mr. Stone.
Thank you. The proposed Valencia Service Area Retail Capacity Fee is on tonight's agenda for the board's consideration. I want to thank our staff, legal counsel, rate consultant, who all worked through this process to establish the proposed fee and responded to input from both the committee and board and concerns raised along the way by stakeholders. I just want to kind of walk through a little timeline of the development of this, how we arrived here. On July 22nd, 2022, the agency engaged Bartle Wills Associates to prepare a capacity fee study for the Valencia service area, and the fee calculation approach was worked on and then presented to a stakeholder meeting on November 10th, 2022. With input from that, went back for further work, and in March of 2023, BWA concluded its analysis, and a second stakeholder meeting was held on March 16th, where a draft of the fee report and calculation was presented to stakeholders, mostly numbers at that point, not all the words. This item was also scheduled and released for the March 20th Finance and Administration Committee, but upon receiving numerous requests from the stakeholders for more time to review, was pulled from the agenda and brought back at a later time. On April 17th, 2023, the F&A committee again had the item on the agenda, and there was an opportunity for a rather at-length presentation from BWA, the consultant, as well as the ratepayer advocate RDN, who conducted their own review of the study. There was also a question and answer session at that time with our legal counsel, Lupe Carruth, from Best, Best, and Krieger. We received two written public comments at that meeting, one from the Building Industry Association of Southern California and one from the Santa Clarita Valley Chamber of Commerce, asking to further table the discussion to allow more time for stakeholder review. At the moment, the committee felt that the study, having been available since March, mid-March, that they would prefer to move it on to the May agenda for action. But ultimately, it was determined that we would wait yet again and take that off the May 2nd agenda to allow additional staff, legal, and consultant discussion, and ultimately consider an alternative approach that was offered up by one of the stakeholders. At the June 6, 2023 Board of Directors meeting, the board received further public comment regarding the methodology of the study, and at that point opted not to act on the fee, and the board and staff considered these public comments. We then continued to meet staff. Legal counsel continued to meet with the stakeholder. In this case, it was Newhall Ranch or Newhall Land and Farming, or Five Point, to talk about the issue of developer contributed facilities and whether they should be included, excluded from the fee, or included, and if they were to be excluded, how that was to be done, whether it was a credit or just keep them out of the calculation. We arrived at a recommendation that's presented tonight, which is to exclude them from the assets that value the system for purposes of calculating a buy-in. So what you have tonight, the assets are those existing assets less outstanding debt, and excluding grants that were received, if any, for paying for those assets, as well as excluding developer contributed facilities that were funded by the developer and not by the agency. And that we picked a cutoff date of, I think, March 2013, and that had to do with the merger, the acquisition timing. So, and there was no contesting that from Five Point. They understood that time frame. Throughout this process, SCV Water has considered input from the stakeholders and taken time to ensure that any fee established is fair and equitable to current customers, to those paying the fee, and to those who we will serve in the future. The proposed retail capacity fee as presented tonight is expected or could generate over its lifetime through build out as much as $21.75 million in additional revenue. This revenue would benefit current and future ratepayers in offsetting capital programs in the service area for retail facilities. I think also it's important to note that under this model, developers will continue to fund local retail system facilities as they install new communities. So when they build a new neighborhood, they are putting all the water lines in. They are paying for those water lines. The agency is not paying for those water lines. The primary remaining issues under discussion over the last few months, as I noted, were the issue of whether facilities built and funded by the developer should be included in the basis of the retail buy-in fee, and how to handle them. As well, I think we touched on concerns about how new facilities that aren't identified yet in the fee will be financed. And the agency has a master plan process underway. We anticipate that upon completion of that master plan, we would revisit the fee. There are also issues pertinent to the particular community that Five Point is building, such as water wells and a treatment system for those wells that is under discussion as to how those will be paid for. Ultimately, we do recommend to the board that we not include contributed facilities in this fee. Were there to be other legal precedents that might change our recommendation, that's certainly open for the future. But we think it's the right decision and the right principle now. And we think that this discussion has opened up hopefully substantive progress on some of these other issues as far as paying for future facilities when they're identified, and for how to handle future development of wells and treatment facilities needed for that community. Having said that, at this time, I would like to introduce Doug Dove and Michael DeGroot from Bartle Wells and Associates, just to walk through the actual mechanics of the Valencia Service Area Retail Capacity Fee calculation. And then after that, we will hear from Anthony Ilowski from RDN, our ratepayer advocate, for their thoughts on this issue.
Good evening. I'm just going to share the presentation here. So my name is Michael DeGroot with Bartle Wells Associates, and we're the rate consultant that developed the water capacity charge for the Valencia service area. And this is a overview of the presentation. I'm going to go over the background and objectives, the study fee methodology, talk about the fee calculation, and then take any questions at the end. So some background on SCV Water. The Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency was created on January 2018 through the merger of three water agencies in the Santa Clarita Valley: Castaic Lake Water Agency, Newhall County Water District, and Valencia Water Company. SCV Water serves a population of approximately 273,000 through about 70,000 retail water connections, and there are about 31,200 existing connections in the Valencia service area. And this is the current Valencia customer base by meter size. You could see the total number of customers is 31,189. And we also have calculated the number of 1-inch meter equivalents based on the maximum safe operating capacity in terms of gallons per minute. And the total number of meter equivalents is 27,958. This slide shows the projected number of Valencia customers based on new development in the Valencia service area through 20-year build-out. And currently, there are 31,189 customers and 27,958 one-inch meter equivalents. And we're projecting another 23,609 customers through build-out. And so the total number of customers in 20 years would be about 54,798. With 50,292 one-inch meter equivalents. So there's going to be a lot of development in this area. So what are capacity charges? These are the one-time fee paid by new customers as a condition of development, and they're levied to recover costs for capacity and facilities benefiting growth. And they're also collected for any changes in property use that result in increased capacity needs. And the purpose of this study is that the Valencia service area is the only service area in the district that does not have an existing capacity fee. And the Valencia service area has substantial planned new growth. And the goal of the study is to develop Valencia service area water capacity charges that are appropriate, legal, and fair. So these are the key criteria for the new fees. We want to comply with government code. We base them on industry standard methodology to recover the costs of existing facilities that benefit growth. And we want to be fair and equitable to existing and future customers. So the legal framework, water and wastewater capacity fees are governed by government code section 66013. And the key provision is that the fee shall not exceed the estimated reasonable cost of providing service for which the fee or charge is imposed. And you can recover costs for existing facilities or future facilities. This one is based on buy-in. And the capacity charges must be segregated from other funds. And the fee methodology that we use to update these charges complies with industry standards. So this is the study fee methodology. Step one is determining the cost of facilities and assets for the fee recovery. Step two is identifying the capacity of the facilities. Step three is to calculate the cost per unit of capacity. And step four is to apply that cost per unit to the capacity needs of new development. So these are the existing water system assets that are included in our fee. It includes land, boosters, communications equipment, furniture and fixtures, hydrants, office, warehouse, building, reservoir tanks and wells, water mains, and water treatment equipment. Those are kind of the backbone facilities that will benefit future growth. And we excluded these items, such as vehicles, large tools and equipment, water meters, services, power operated equipment, stores equipment, and other intangibles, because they're not part of the backbone infrastructure of the system. So our study approach, the basis of the cost is existing facilities escalated for construction cost, inflation, and the fees are based on replacement cost of those assets less depreciation in current dollars. And depreciation is the loss of value due to the age of the facilities. And we also exclude Valencia debt related to existing facilities. So the projected Valencia water system capacity is the current water system capacity based on the current number of 1-inch meter equivalents plus projected future development. So the basic calculation is to take the existing system valuation and divide it by the current plus future Valencia water system capacity. And these are, Valencia has some outstanding debt. There's a Series 2018A installment loan, which has a principal outstanding of about $26.7 million. And the Valencia acquisition loan, which has an outstanding principal of about $58.5 million. So the total outstanding principal related to the Valencia assets that were subtracted from the fee amounts to about $85.2 million. And so this is the fee calculation. And you can see on the left-hand column is the original cost of the Valencia system assets. So you've got land, depreciable assets, and developer contributed capital after March of 2013. And you can see that that amounted to about $5 million at original purchase cost. And so the total original cost of the system subtracting those developer contributions is about $148.6 million. And when we escalate that into current dollars, that value is $341.1 million. Taking out depreciation, the system value is $134.2 million, and we estimate that it's about 60% depreciated. So then we adjusted that $134.2 million by taking out the outstanding principal on Valencia service area debt of $85.2 million to get a total asset valuation for the capacity fee of about $49 million. And so then we took the $49 million and divided it by the ultimate number of 1-inch meter equivalents at build-out of 50,292 to get a dollar per 1-inch meter equivalent of $974. And then we apply that for each meter size based on those meter ratios. So the fee will vary from the lowest size meter, which is a 3/4 inch, and that would be $585, all the way up to the 12 inch meter, which would pay $83,784. And this is the one-time connection fee to connect to the Valencia service area. And that's it for my presentation.
Thank you very much. Are we open to, I guess we should consider public comments at this point. I do have one public comment card.
Do we have a presentation from the ratepayer advocate?
Oh.
Sorry. Probably best to get through them both. And then...
All right. So we're on the basis that we have no further presentation than we've seen it then?
No, there is one more presentation.
All right. Very good. So we have a public comment card from Ms. Noltemeyer. If you'd like to come to the podium, make your public comment.
President Martin, we should wait till after the second presentation.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. Hold fire for a while, Ms. Noltemeyer.
There he is.
Hey, how's it going? Sorry about that. I was having a little bit of trouble.
Sorry, yeah, we're just, Zoom world, we want to get everybody transitioned. So when you're ready to go, Anthony, please introduce yourself and present your material. And thank you.
Great. And everyone can see the presentation here on the screen. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for having me today. I'm sorry for anyone that's had to see this presentation before. But I'm glad that you were able to take the time to listen to our results. My name is Anthony Lusky. I'm with Robert D. Niehaus Incorporated, and I'm here serving as SCV Water's ratepayer advocate. The ratepayer advocate position was included in the bill that created SCV Water, SB 634. Basically, my role is supposed to look out for the concerns of agency ratepayers. For a little bit of background on RDN, we've been assisting agencies with utility rate and fee studies for over 40 years now, and we've been working with SCV Water as ratepayer advocate since 2019. Currently, we are in phase 5 of the fee study process as outlined in the agency rules. We reviewed Bardo Wells analysis, re-reviewed the new analysis, developed our recommendations, and provided a written report. And that includes all of the recommendations that we had for the study. And now is the time when the board of directors must decide whether to initiate the fees or to push them to the next session again. As ratepayer advocate, we try to balance sometimes competing concerns, which we believe affect agency customers. The first concern is customer equity. Current customers have to this point paid to have extra capacity in the water system to accommodate growth. We believe it's only fair that new customers share some of the burden for the available capacity built into the water system. Also, new customer contributions can be used for asset replacement and repair, as was mentioned in the previous report, and that reduces the need for future rate increases. Higher capacity fees are generally good for current customers. While it is important that new customers pay a fair price, some economic and legal concerns balance out making the fees too high. First, if the fees are too high, it may hinder growth in the area, thus reducing the total amount of capacity fees which are collected. Reduced growth also reduces overall cost sharing when designing rates and future revenue requirements. A water system having more customers is usually better because of economy of scale. Additionally, fees must adhere to California law, again, as Bardo Wells mentioned. If fees don't, they can be legally challenged, which can be costly for ratepayers. California law dictates that fees cannot exceed costs. Bardo Wells described their process to compute the capacity fees. Overall, RDN agrees that these are the best available methods for the study. To complete the study, Bardo Wells used industry standards which conform to recommendations outlined by the AWWA and the state of California for determining equivalent meter capacities. Growth forecasts are consistent with published reports and reflect the most likely scenario based on previous Monte Carlo simulations. Final asset valuation, replacement costs minus depreciation, reflects the current value of Valencia infrastructure, as well as removing the contributed capital, which makes it fair for developers as well as current customers. Additionally, the buy-in method used by Bardo Wells reflects the most equitable distribution of costs between current and future customers, especially since SCV Water has a system-wide capacity fee as well. As ratepayer advocate, we offered some refinements to the methodology during the initial fee designing process, and I will briefly describe the refinements and the actions taken based on those recommendations in the next couple slides. First, we recommended that Bardo Wells use a more targeted cost index, such as an index for Los Angeles specifically, instead of the California-wide cost index, to increase the precision of estimated replacement costs. However, once we discussed with the consultant and staff, we determined that the 20-city index, which is the California-wide index, tends to be less volatile, and Bardo Wells' preference for consistency with the system-wide fee calculation, which also uses the 20-system average. So the consensus was that we should use this 20-city or California-wide index instead of the Los Angeles index. Second, we recommended that Bardo Wells remove the outstanding debt principal from the fee calculation. Current customers and customers who connect with the system are required to pay the installment loans, as mentioned in the previous presentation. The 2018 A debt was issued to fund capital improvements in the Valencia service area. It is standard practice to remove the debt principal from asset valuations for facility capacity fee calculations because assets are still being paid for through rates and new customers will begin paying for the debt service when they join the system. Removing the debt helped to avoid double counting. In the end, the consensus that we would remove the outstanding debt principal from the 2018A and the acquisition loan from the final calculation, and that's reflected in both Bardo Wells' report and our concurring report. Additional recommendations, and these are future recommendations, we recommend that the new fees increase based on the consumer price index increase. This recommendation was also included in the final report. And finally, we recommend that the retail capacity fees are reevaluated periodically so that the asset values are fairly represented. Since many of the current assets are fully depreciated in the retail capacity fee calculation, their imminent replacement funded by current ratepayers means that their value will increase. After all, they will be new at that point. And so we believe, and I think there's consensus, that these fees get reevaluated periodically to ensure that the current asset value is reflected. Finally, to summarize, RDN, as ratepayer advocate, found the retail capacity fees to be fair and defensible, and we believe that the agency should implement them as designed. Thank you very much.
All right. I take it that concludes our presentations. We can now move on to public comment. As I said earlier, we do have a public comment card for Ms. Noltemeyer. So if you'd like to come to the podium and make your public comment, please do.
Pam Noltemeyer, what we are concerned about is that we do live in Valencia and what is going to happen, because we do become like a good ball back and forth. And we've been there many, many years. So, and have so many of the people I know there, they come there, they stay there. And we don't have a big turnover. So I'm wondering what is going to happen to us with this type of turmoil that is going and change that's going on. And it's probably something we haven't gone through a couple of times before, but we have a lot of younger people with young children, and I'm just wondering how it's going to affect them. And that's always our concern, because Valencia kind of gets tossed around always. And they like to say, okay, they live in Valencia, we can just keep raising their rates. And that's not good for young families. For us, we say, just try it. And maybe the people will rebel against it. And you will not get what you hope with what you're doing. And I've seen that in our area, especially where they say, well, this isn't our debt you're talking about. And a lot of times it hasn't been fair. We've been there a long time. And we have other properties, too, that we see what goes on with them. And for some reason, Valencia gets to be the kicking ball that they like to take and use an example or something. I don't think that's fair. There's all kinds of new developments out there, beautiful developments. And I'm just waiting to see how fair anything that is done is done. And it's changed ownership. We know that. And that has to be dealt with. But I haven't seen strongness in this group here in doing or presenting what they're doing. And we just come to the meetings and listen. And I hope it gets better than what we've had. Thank you.
You didn't hear me. Thank you, Ms. Noltemeyer, for your public comment. I do have a letter received as a public comment, and I will read it. It is from the Newhall Land and Farming Company. It's from Donald L. Kimball, Vice President and Assistant Secretary on behalf of Newhall Land and Farming Company. I will read the letter to you, the public comment. The Newhall Land and Farming Company, parentheses, a California limited partnership, close parentheses, a California Limited Partnership, NLF, has received and reviewed the revised Valencia Service Area Retail Water Capacity Fee Study dated August 29, 2023, parentheses, the revised study, prepared for the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency, parentheses, the agency. In light of the new policy set forth in the revised study reflecting the exclusion of contributed capital, NLF has no further comment regarding the staff's recommendation for the Valencia Service Area Retail Water Capacity Fee, and thanks to the agency staff for their work on this matter. Signed, Donald L. Kimball, Vice President and Assistant Secretary. Thank you for your public comment. Do we have any other public comments from members online?
We do. Just one moment. Ms. Planbeck, you may begin your public comment. Ms. Planbeck?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay, good. Lynn Planbeck, former board member. My concern is how this went for 10 years without them being charged any capacity fees. Every developer in town has had to pay capacity fees, and every other water district has charged them. And I, you know, Dan was responsible for this. He's a previous employee of New Holland and Farming, and he was vice president of Valencia Water Company before the company was acquired. That's a little too cozy, and you should all be looking into that. It must be an incredible amount of money to have not paid any capacity fees for 10 years. And this is unfair to the Valencia ratepayers because you have charged them more than anyone else. And at the same time, they have not had to pay these fees from the past. I think it's a little odd that you're adjusting for the amounts of inflation and what products would cost now when they were never charged for anything for 10 years. I guess that's my comment. I can't believe that this is just sort of being passed over, that this sort of shenanigans went on. I mean, Dan must not have had to know this was happening. He was the vice president of Valencia Water Company. He had to know this was happening. So I wish that the board would take a look at this. That sort of, potential misactions should not go without some kind of review. And it's unfair to the public to have allowed them to get away without paying these previous fees. That's all.
Thank you, Ms. Planbeck, for your comments. We have any other members online who'd like to make public comment?
We do not.
Very good. That concludes the public comment. We now, I hope, Michael from Bartle Wells and Anthony from RDN haven't gone far, because we can now open it up to questions on their presentation from the board, if there are any. Director Armitage.
Thank you. I don't really have any questions because I mentioned earlier, and I'll mention again, I spent a lot of time thinking about this issue, and I did reach out with my questions before the meeting to help me better understand some of the aspects of this. And I did spend a lot of time on this, as I'm sure many of us did, because I do think this is an issue that deserves critical thought, because as we heard in the presentation, it deals with the issue of fairness in the burden of cost between existing customers and future customers. And I, to speak to former Director Planbeck's point, I also still don't understand why our largest division of the agency hasn't had a retail capacity fee up until the time of this discussion and possibly after tonight. But I do appreciate the fact that when the board recently did ask for the work to be done to start the process of how we can put together the retail fee for the Valencia division, that that was done. The steps were taken to start working on this. And that ultimately, according to the calculations, will bring approximately $22 million throughout build out into our budget. So that's a good thing. So I just want to appreciate that we're going from zero now to something that we're going to be able to collect. And I am leaning heavily, as I make my consideration and decision around this, on the fact that staff does consider this a stepping stone towards building a better process that hopefully will be considered to be fair to all and uniform in the future once the master plan is released. So kind of after everything kind of shook out in my brain and thinking about all this and kind of looking at the evolution of this process and how it all played out, there are kind of three things that I'd just like to see happen going forward. One is, and we've talked a little bit about this, is definitely prioritizing the work that needs to be done to create that uniform retail capacity fee or connection fee, whatever we end up calling it. I know there's some confusion about all the different types of fees that are very similar in nature. But I think that'll be essential. And I do hope that staff does prioritize that so that we can hopefully hash this out sooner than later. And it's not an ongoing issue. Secondly, and I know there's been a trend towards this, but I haven't seen anything in terms of like a solid policy, but I do believe that wind structure infrastructure is needed for a new development, that the developers be the ones to do the work, to bring water to that new development. At their cost. And it would hopefully include things like if new drills are being drilled and that water is found to be contaminated, that the groundwater treatment is part of that process as well, and things like that. And then lastly, just asking that staff please continue to keep us updated as this evolves, and hopefully becomes a better process for all, and continues to allow us to give input into the process. So those are my thoughts. Thank you.
I know I'm invisible. I want to start off by thanking staff for doing a lot of work putting this all together. This one was also a very hard one for me, but I like to pride myself on the fact that I'm willing to always be open to new information and being willing to learn and grow, because if not, then we're just making decisions because we feel like it. So I would like to echo Director Armitage's words and say that I hope that going forward, we do get this master plan taken care of so we can have a better sense of what these fees are going to look like in whole. I hope that the developers actually I know that they're mostly, I think, building most of the infrastructure, but I hope that we turn that into a policy. And when they're developing things, like they're supposed to bring water supplies for their developments, I hope they understand that that also means that it can't just be any kind of water. It has to be clean water, or else we can't use it. So I hope they understand that that is part of the deal as well. We don't need to have our people putting out more money for these PFAS treatments beyond what they should. So yeah, not a fun one. It's never fun, but again, this is better than what we had. I remember sitting next to Director Colley when we both realized that we were not collecting fees, and I think it's ridiculous. And I'm glad that since I found out and I've been here, which has been just a little over, 2.5 years kind of thing, almost 3 years, that we're actually making change and making a difference and bringing things to light and taking care of them, things that should have happened a long time ago, but better late than never. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Bronstein. Any other comments down here? Vice President Gutze.
I just wanted to make sure somebody answers Ms. Noltemeyer's concern about how these fees will affect existing Valencia customers, and they will help them. As stated in the presentations by the rate consultants, this money will go to offset replacement costs that the existing customers would otherwise have to pay for themselves. So it should be a help to existing customers. I will also echo that I appreciate the time taken on this process and the well-intentioned dialogue. I think it is a good goal of government to try to understand other people's viewpoints, as well as make sure that our viewpoints are presented clearly so that the public can understand what we're doing. So it took a little extra time, but I think it was a good example of a process that worked. And I'm in support of the measure.
Right. I don't see any. Vice President Ozofsky, do you want to speak?
No, just appreciate the time taken in vetting this process out and having dialogue with the developer, along with efforts made by Barton Wells, our ratepayer advocate, certainly our staff and our legal counsel. And having many presentations about this topic, I think this is the right way to go. So I would like to make a motion to move forward with this retail capacity fee. Back to you, President Martin.
All right. Before I ask for a second, let me make a comment. I just want to say, you know, this item has received more staff, committee, and board time than anything I can remember in the recent times between CLWA and SCV Water. And I think between the consultant who developed the structure and our ratepayer advocate and our staff, you've got three groups of professionals working to solve this problem. And I think in the end, as Vice President Gutzeit said, we landed on a fair conclusion that's fair to the developer, fair to the citizens, fair to the agency. And so I will go ahead and support this, but I'll ask for a second from the board before we go on.
I'll second it.
We have a second by Director Bronstein. Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
Vice President Wojciechowski.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass, and that's resolution number SCV-386.
Thank you, everyone, for the time you put in on this item. All right. We can now move on to item 7, fleet warehousing presentation presented by fleet and warehousing supervisor Jesus Martinez Ramirez. Unless, Mr. Stone, you want to make any opening remarks, we'll just turn it over to our supervisor.
So not to be outdone by... oh gosh, what was the common nickname for the Barbie in the other movie? Barbenheimer. So as much buzz as Barbenheimer got, this presentation got a lot of buzz in the committee. So it may be a little stripped down, but it's probably just as buzzy. So fasten your seatbelts. Jesus, take it away.
Thank you for that. Good evening, board members, staff, and members of the public. My name is Jesus Martinez Ramirez, Fleet and Warehousing Supervisor. Item 7 is an informational item on new regulations that will be requiring our fleet to transition to zero emissions. And we can move on to this next slide. We've been discussing this regulation for the last couple of months. It's by the California Air Resources Board. It's called the Advanced Clean Fleet Regulation, or ACF. And it's really two components. The first one is a manufacturing mandate that requires vehicle manufacturers to increase the number of vehicles that are zero emissions that they produce. Then that's the first component. And the second component is creating a market for those vehicles through a purchasing mandate, and that's the ACF, and that's the regulation that will be impacting us. And both of these regulations are regulations that at least a manufacturing mandate has been adopted by other states. And then it also has been upheld by the EPA. So this is something that has been, that it's going to be here, and it's not, it's unlikely that it will go away. We can go to the next slide. This regulation includes a couple of exemptions for fleets to be able to meet with these strict new requirements. That includes having a backup vehicle that travels less than 1,000 miles, situations where a vehicle may catch on fire or is involved in an accident and can no longer be driven, how to replace those vehicles. If a vehicle drives more than an amount of miles or energy that is not currently available in the market. There's also exemptions for infrastructure delays from the utilities, and CARB will be also developing an exemption list that has what vehicles are not included because they're just not commercially available. And later on in the phases of the regulation, there's components for mutual aid down the line. And we can go to the next slide. So right now, the regulation has been adopted by the board, and it's working its way through the Office of Administrative Law, which is the OAL. There's still some bills that are working their way through the legislative process, including Assembly Bill 1594. It is supported by AQUA, and it's really meant to kind of create some leverage for public agencies to make sure that CARB is taking into account the special needs for public utilities like ourselves. As far as the implementation process, CARB has looked into establishing stakeholder groups to be able to collect feedback from the different stakeholders that are going to be impacted by this regulation, including state and local government fleets, private fleets, and drayage, and then also long distance hauling. As far as the planning side, we're looking to use telematics, which has been completed, the rollout through our fleet to be able to use data for the planning process of which vehicles can be transitioned as well as the infrastructure itself. As far as changes to the regulation, it's really unknown at this time. There are being challenged on the basis of CEQA. It's unclear how far those challenges will go, but as I've mentioned, at least the manufacturing mandate has been adopted by other states, and the EPA has also upheld those. So CARB is very confident that this regulation will stand any legal challenges that come to it. And we can go to the next slide. When it comes to the agency's compliance options, there's two options. The first one is a milestone option, which really just says that the fleet makeup of any agency would need to increase over time the percentage of zero emission. So starting with 10% and working its way up to 100% by 2039. And the second would be through a purchasing requirement. So that would say that only new purchases are impacted by this regulation. The purchasing requirement is the option that most fleets will pick because it's slightly easier to comply with. And we also are going to be looking to come back in November to the committee and December to the board to consider also some strategic replacements of some gasoline vehicles before the regulation takes into effect in January. So that will also be an option that the agency can take into account. We can go to the next slide. When it comes to the planning process, these are the different components. We are currently working with Turberti, the agency's energy consultant, to really complete a compliance assessment, as well as look at our fleet to be able to recommend a transition plan for our whole fleet, as well as doing a holistic assessment of our infrastructure to figure out what we need to do in order to bring those new services to be able to support these many vehicles transitioning to zero emissions. And we'll also be looking at the design and the infrastructure and the construction, and that will involve working with our utility, Edison, and then also down the line, submitting exemptions to CARB. Next slide, please. When it comes to infrastructure, we're looking at it in two stages, the first one being short-term and the second one being long-term. So with the short-term, we're really just looking at what can we do with our existing infrastructure, while the long-term planning will include bringing in those new services from Edison and really upgrading our own infrastructure as well. We could go to the next slide. There's also other components that we're looking at and exploring, including mobile charging. So that could include charging as a service. That's a new business model that is being developed and being tested. We also know that there's mobile charging solutions so that if the infrastructure is not there, you can bring these trailers and be able to charge some of those equipments, which can also be beneficial during power outages and other situations like that as backup power, and then as well as some self-contained solutions like the container that you see on the top right. So we're looking at all the different options to see what's the best option for the agency to be able to meet these new requirements. Next slide, please. And when it comes to the vehicles, again, we're looking at the transition in three stages. And it's, as you can see from the photos, it's pretty straightforward, right? It really comes down to the size of the vehicle, the smaller the vehicle, the easier it is to transition. As you get into the medium duty vehicles that tow and have a heavy payload, it's a lot harder. And then once you go into the really big vehicles with really large payloads and large trailers that they're towing, it becomes very difficult. So this is kind of the timeline we're looking at, and we anticipate that the technology on these vehicles will get better over time as well. Next slide, please. I'm available for any questions you might have.
Thank you for your presentation, Mr. Ramirez. Are there any public comments? April, I have no public comment cards.
There is not.
Do we have any questions or discussion? Director Brunstein.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this presentation. I really enjoyed it. I love the idea of those charging, mobile charging buses. I don't know what they are exactly, but that seems really cool. My question was, well, I have two questions. One is, are the gasoline ones that we might want to purchase earlier, are those the ones that are the hard ones that are really hard to replace? Is that what we're looking for?
The criteria we'll be looking at will be what vehicles will need to be replaced over the next couple years, and of those vehicles, which ones will be really difficult to replace, either because of cost or just market availability. This regulation applies to Ford F-250s, but there's not an electric F-250 in the market. So it's really hard to plan for that. And we don't anticipate that it will be available.
Trying to buy extra time exactly. with it. Okay.
For the technology to get better, but also for the infrastructure to be installed.
And then the vehicles, the third category of the vehicles that are will be very hard to replace, the 7 to 10 years. Is that the Ford, whatever you said?
No problem.
Car names just go over. They have four wheels sometimes, right?
No problem.
So are those the cars that we're talking about, the 7 to 10 years, or?
It's going to be within all of those three groups.
Okay.
Yeah, and it will include, a big component of that will be cost. Right, because electric vehicles or hydrogen vehicles could be 2 to 3 times as expensive as a traditional gas vehicle. And then also, this would be the first generation of those vehicles by startups that may or may not be here within 5 to 10 years to honor battery warranties. So we don't want to get stuck with those first generation vehicles. So
yeah,
that's why we're looking for ways to really buy time for the vehicles to get better, but for also our infrastructure to go
into place. I guess I'm just trying to figure out like the 7 to 10 years, like do we have vehicles right now? They will last us that time, or are we looking to buy ones, or like, that's kind of what I'm asking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll be looking at some of those vehicles to replace some of those, and some other ones are just our diesel vehicles that we can no longer purchase. So those we'll just be looking at maintaining them, for as long as we can to be able to support our operations.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Vice President Gutzeit.
I know this is a new presentation for some of the directors, but I really like the original version of this presentation. And kudos to you for making it interesting, even on a distilled down version. I still learned some things and was reminded of some things. So I appreciate the style of this presentation and the forward planning that we're doing for a new regulation coming out that, it's extremely comprehensive for the size of agency, and we're putting a lot of thought into it. So I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Vice President Ozahusky.
I got to say, what a nightmare. Mr. Ramirez, thank you for doing your best and working legislation out of Sacramento that is so out of touch. It would be so much better if Sacramento would let the market dictate a better product and have that better product be presented to the public at large. A few questions. The 8,500 pounds limit, does that include things that are post-welded on or post-bolted onto the truck? or after the equipment is on the vehicle?
It would be based on the rating of the vehicle. So if the rating for that vehicle is over the 8,500 pounds, then it would be regulated by this regulation, regardless of ultimately what type of body that vehicle has. So that will include all of our F-250s. And once the regulation is in full effect, it will be include about 100 of our vehicles.
Okay, understood. And you mentioned that in November, you will be... we were approaching the board with a list of vehicles that we want to purchase that would, you know, fossil fuel vehicles that will help us kind of elongate our transition to zero emission vehicles. Do you have an approximate amount in terms of the amount of vehicles or approximate cost that you'll be bringing to the board?
Not yet. We're working with our consultant to finalize that list, and we're also utilizing the data from our telematics to really hone down on identifying those vehicles. But at the moment, we don't have that final number.
Okay, understood. And as far as telematics are concerned, could we use... as far as extending the lifespan of the vehicles as much as possible, what sort of data are you pulling from telematics that can help us do that, aside from tire rotations?
A lot of it could be information about idling. We know that some idling is required, right, to be able to maintain the cab at a comfortable temperature for the operators during hot summer days and to run the lights at night for traffic lighting. But there's some idling that we could reduce. There's also some vehicles that we can change their assignments to reduce the number of miles and hours that are being put on those vehicles so that hopefully we can extend the life. A good example of that was with our meter reading. We moved our operators to a smaller vehicle, a Ford Maverick. It's easier to drive. It's also better on fuel. And then that will help save the life of some of our other vehicles. So those are some of the things we look at, is how is the vehicle being utilized, and where can we, how can we extend the vehicles by rotating assignments or just maybe changing operator behavior to get the best life out of that vehicle. And then also maintenance, right? We're going to be using the telematics option of using data models to get into predictive analytics so that we can predict when components will fail before they fail so that we can address them, and that will reduce both on cost and hopefully extend the life of the vehicle as well.
Thank you, Mr. Martier. Mr. Ramirez, just one comment here. I'd like to thank you and Ms. Patterson of extending an internship program to your department. I'm a 100% supportive of internship programs. So thank you for doing that. And hopefully you'll be able to maintain that every year.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And we actually have one of our interns here today. So he's learning about, you know, the public sector process. So this is Nate. He's a senior right now, and he's already certified, completed his Ford training. And, you know, he has the sky that's the limit for him. So we're excited to help him in his career within the public sector.
Well, Nate, welcome to SVU Water. Take full advantage of being here. Thank you, Mr. Ramirez. Back to you, President Martin.
Is he a senior in high school?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Good. I know. You. I'm thinking back to how clueless I was as a senior in high school.
Yeah, good for you.
Director Marks has a comment.
Sure. Thank you for that presentation, Mr. Perez. A question you showed a charging station. Do you see us acquiring or have a need to acquire something like that? Or was that just an example of technology that's out there?
I think ultimately that will be an option that we'll definitely need to explore, just to be able to sustain our operations for those vehicles during power outages. And that's, you know, one of the biggest concerns that we have raised, as well as other AQUA members, is what do you do in those situations where there is no power? So this will have to be some alternative, as well as running diesel generators, right, to charge these vehicles. So we'll be exploring that as well. And also looking at how can it be used, right? And in other senses, we have other generators that we use for other purposes. So maybe there's multiple uses that we can find for these units. Thank you.
Director Armitage.
Thank you. I didn't catch your name, the intern's name. Did you say Nate?
Yes.
No. Hi, Nate. It's great to see you. And please come back to board meetings. I love seeing new faces in here, especially newer, younger faces. So, so this is the second time I've seen the presentation, and I appreciate it just as much as the first time. And I just want to repeat kind of a comment I made, and I feel like I come at this at a different angle. And I recognize that the CARB regulations have presented quite a challenge to you and your team and other agencies and their teams as well in trying to figure out how to work around this and meet the regulations. And thank you for all the work that you're doing around that. And, you know, I ultimately, these challenges and the work that we have to do to get around them, in my opinion, are going to lead to better outcomes and better status of our natural resources for all of us. So it's difficult and it's challenging, but in my opinion, I think it's worth it. And I actually appreciate our state leaders and some of our federal leaders who are trying to think about strategies on how to leave our world a better place for our kids and our grandkids and other future generations. So it's hard work, but I see it paying off in a very good way. So thank you again for all that you're doing to meet those challenges. And I kind of feel obligated that my fellow FNA committee member isn't here. Director Colley was, I should share that he was very enthusiastic about your presentation style. And I think he, if he were here today, he would remind you of that and tell you that he very much enjoyed your presentation. So I feel obligated to share that. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And, you know, just to address that, we're not, you know, we don't, we agree with the goals, right, of the regulations. It's just the approach, right, that we have some concerns. And, you know, we'll do our best to reduce our emissions in the meantime. And one of those is reusing renewable diesel. So we've been doing that for over a year before even the requirements take into effect. So we'll do our best with what we can in the short term. So.
All right. One more for Director Ozahowski or Vice President Ozahowski.
Yeah, a quick follow-up. So for the fleet that we're going to retire, do we have plans on using government-like eBay sites, or how do we plan to sell those assets in other states?
We're looking at what are the different options. There's traditional auction houses, online auction houses, there's enterprise. And then we're also going to be looking at also our employees, see if they're interested in purchasing some of our surplus vehicles as well. So we'll be looking at what's the best, ultimately, what's the best option for the agency when it comes to that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Back to you, President Martin.
All right. Sounds like you've got a lot of enthusiastic support on the board, but I'll be the one to maybe throw a little cold water on it. Do you anticipate any funding support from those that put this otherwise unfunded mandate on our agency and other agencies around the state? This is going to be a very expensive proposition, and unless there's some funding support, it's all going to fall on our ratepayers, other than a possible promotional discount on an electric vehicle like they've done to promote sales. Have we looked into anything like that, the possible budget, that the amount of money we're going to have to invest, especially on the infrastructure to support this program going forward?
We are looking at that currently with our consultant, Herberti, and then that will be one of the recommendations will be the cost of the infrastructure. CARB has been very clear that they want to support projects that push the industry forward. They don't want to pay for compliance. So, you know, it's going to be really projects that are going to be challenging in themselves, right? It's not going to be just electric vehicles. But we will be working with, for example, Edison with their Charge Ready program, which helps cover some of the costs for the infrastructure. And then on the vehicle side, we'll be exploring the state programs as well. The only challenge with those is that once you take grant funding for some of these vehicles, then it doesn't count towards your requirements for new purchases. So that's the only downside, because they don't want to double count the emission savings from the program. So, but yes, we'll be exploring all those things.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for the presentation.
No problem.
All right. I think that concludes item 7. We can move to item 8, General Manager's Report on Activities, Projects, and Programs. Mr. Stone.
All right. Thank you very much. A relatively short report tonight. In September, I attended the State Water Contractors Board meeting and also the Delta Conveyance Finance Authority Board meetings held in Sacramento. At the State Water Contractors Board, we received a presentation from the Deputy Director of the Department of Water Resources on operational issues and included some good content on DWR's strategic plan. So I have shared that with our executive team just for any interesting, kind of insights. And there were a couple. We had an excellent presentation at our executive team meeting last week from our HR staff, and I want to thank them for that. We've been trying to develop some thematic meetings once in a while and hear from different parts of the organization and get more in depth on issues. And I thought it was very educational for us across the organization to hear about their, the capabilities that they're developing with new tools, as well as just reminding ourselves of the scope of activities that human resources has to take on, either from just the scope of handling, operations and benefits and hirings and whatnot, and then other mandated things. So I think it was a good interaction. We also received a presentation from a possible training resource that we're evaluating. I think I mentioned in the past, one of our themes this year has been trying to look at our training programs and resources for staff to be able to make sure everybody has the tools they need to develop in their current position and for their future here. And so a good presentation from that source. We also had our SCV Water Health and Wellness Fair last week on Wednesday, I think it was Wednesday, the 27th. And ironically, I had to miss it because I wasn't feeling good. I went and got my vaccine the day before, and it just knocked me on my whatever. So hopefully that means I've got great immunity response, but I'm feeling fine now. But yeah, I was just like just not there. So took a sick day, but I heard it was well attended. So hopefully, and many other people got jabbed for flu and whatnot there. So that's a relatively short presentation tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Do we have any public comment, Madam Secretary?
We do not.
Very good. Any questions or discussion comments from the board on the report? Seeing none, thank you. We can move to item 9, committee meeting recap report for informational purposes only. There was one report that was included in your packet. Are there any public comments on that one report?
There is not.
Very good. Any questions from the board on the one committee report? Seeing none, we can move to item 10, written reports for informational purposes only. There are 4 reports included in your packet, as well as the committee planning calendars. Are there any public comment on those items, Madam Secretary?
There is not.
Very good. Any questions from the board on the written reports or the planning calendar? Director Armitage.
Thank you. In the report for Finance Administration and Information Technology, just wanted to make a couple comments on things that were noted in there. One, I very much appreciated the sentence that said that staff's working on centralizing procurement of supplies to reduce costs by standardizing supplies and purchasing more environmentally friendly items in support of the agency's sustainability efforts. So I just want to say thank you for walking the walk. Thank you. Appreciate that. And then let's see, the continued efforts in trying to spread the word on the ratepayer assistance program. I want to recognize that and say thank you for that as well. I see the number of applications is continuing to slowly rise, so that's good. And then last on this report was just, I see here that you're preparing to recruit for additional interns, an engineering intern and a GIS intern, which made me really happy because I love having the interns and I think it's fantastic that we're continuing that program. So thank you for that. Quickly in the treatment distribution operations and maintenance section report, just on the last page under safety, emergency and risk management, I just noted that there were zero recordable incidents in the month of August. Yay! I was glad to see that. And thank you to our safety team for doing such a great job to keep our staff safe. And then lastly, underwater resources and outreach. Let's see, what's my note on that one? Thank you for the outreach, the continued outreach to HOAs. It noted that there was a meeting with the North Park HOA Board of Directors. Fantastic. Thank you for noting that. And then the event that they did for the Bark Park at the Promenade Apartments at Town Center, I thought that was so fantastic and I didn't hear any word about it beforehand. And so I just want to give recognition to that because it seems to me that there are now parts of the community who are reaching out and taking initiative, right, to do these types of landscape renovation programs where they're incorporating more drought tolerant plants into their landscape. And is that, am I understanding that correctly? So I just thought that was fantastic to see. And hopefully the enthusiasm continues to spread in other parts of the community as well. So that's it. Thank you.
Vice President Ozahusky.
Quick question, Ms. Patterson. According to notes on page 32 of the board packet, staff attended the California Water Data Summit. We actually sent someone to that summit? We'll leave the microphone next time next to the desk.
Yes. There were three employees from the customer service department that attended that data summit, the customer service manager, supervisor, and lead. And they found it extremely informative. A lot of, like with most conferences, AI, just looking at, you know, the next version and what we can include. I know we're looking at other options for customers, whether it's like the chatbot feature or other things that we can put on our website to help with the customers, but they found it really informative.
Excellent. All right, thank you. Back to you, President Martin.
Any other questions from the board on this item? That would conclude item 10, written reports. We can move to item 11, President's report. And I have an update on a few items for you tonight. On outside the agency conferences and events, the State of the City will be on October 26th at the Canyon Country Community Center at 3 p.m. Unfortunately, on the very same day, the United Water Conservation District 2023 Summit for Water Sustainability will be held both in person and virtually, as I said, on October 26th from 1 to 4 p.m., overlapping the State of the City. The in-person will be at the United Water Conservation District. There's also remote options. The Valley Industrial Association, the BASH, Fire and Ice Ball, will be held November 3, 2023 at 6 p.m. at the Hyatt Regency. The Southern California Water Coalition annual meeting and dinner will be held at the Balboa Bay Resort on November 2nd, 2023 at 5:30 p.m. for the VIP reception and 6:30 p.m. for the dinner and program. Please let the board secretary know if you're interested in attending that. And lastly, the Aqua 2023 Fall Conference will be held in Palm Desert on November 28th to 30, 2023. Please check your emails for upcoming additional events. Upcoming board meetings, the regular board meeting for October 17th and will be held on this boardroom at 6 p.m. A special board meeting on October 20th at 1 p.m. will be held to conduct the general manager review. Upcoming committee meetings held at Summit Circle and EWS Boardroom at 5:30 p.m. will be the October 5 Engineering and Operations, the October 11 Water Resources and Watershed Committee meeting, and the October 19th Public Outreach and Legislation Committee meeting. Upcoming meetings at this at right here in the Rio Vista Boardroom will be October 16th, the Finance Administration Committee meeting. Are there any public comments on that report, Madam Secretary?
There is not.
Any questions from the board on the report? Very good. We can move to AB 1230, to item 12, AB 1234 reports. Are there any AB 1234 reports tonight? We'll start with Director Armitage and come your my way.
Thank you. On September 20th, I attended the Special Districts Association of North Los Angeles County Executive Committee meeting online, where we further planned for the next general membership meeting, which will be on October 12th at 11:30 at, I believe it's at Antelope Valley East Kern Water District. We have over 40 RSVPs, which is really cool because I think that's our high, hopefully if everybody shows up, our highest attendance ever. So that's really nice to see the support growing for the still fairly new chapter. And the speaker will be the president or head of the California Association of Public Information Officers. Did I say that right? Okay, I got the thumbs up. And about outreach and presenting information to the public. So hopefully some of you will be coming. If you haven't RSVP'd yet, please do. I think it'll be a really good one. So. And then we talked a little bit more about developing the strategic plan for the group. And that's it. Thank you.
Director Marks.
Strokeway. On September 28th, I attended the FIA meeting that was held at the sheriff station. And there's a tour of the sheriff station. And the outstanding facilities there and the interest in the morale of the deputies there. Was actually pretty high. They were really happy to be assigned to our community and the facility there.
Very good. Thank you, Director Marks. Vice President Ozahowski.
All right. On October 2nd, I attended the SCDGSA regular board meeting. On September 21st, I attended the Southern California Water Coalition webinar entitled Charting the Path in Energy Advancements at the Water Energy Nexus. On that note, Mr. Byrne, I have a quick question. Nothing prevents us from the water agency on generating our own electricity via solar and wind. Does that also include potentially processing organic waste and converting it to what they call renewable natural gas? Would that constitute that as well?
I have no idea, but it sounds
honestly.
I mean, okay, someone else might, but yeah, it's not something I'm familiar with. I apologize.
But nothing prevents us from generating power, right?
Oh, in the act. I'm sorry.
Yes.
No, we have some authority in the act to generate power and to, yes, we do. So I thought you were talking about what is the regulatory environment and whether we would be able to do that or not. So yes, there is. And I'm forgetting the exact section, but there is a section that is specifically related to us having the authority to generate power and participate in, I believe, public-private partnerships related to power generation.
Does that have to be within our jurisdiction? Does it have to be within our ownership over property?
That's a good question. I do not believe it has to be within our jurisdiction, but I'm happy to take a quick look. And after the meeting, I could let you know if you like.
Yes, please.
I'm looking
Thank
it
you.
Up right now.
Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you. Over here, any AB 1234 reports? Director Brown School.
I mean, I'm not collecting a stipend on it, but I met today with our GM, Matt Stone, and we had a lovely, lovely long conversation. Or we beat the capacity retail fee to death, I think.
Vice President Gutsay.
I have nothing.
You're not
Unless I'm forgetting something. GSA. I didn't attend that yesterday. I was not there.
But say what it was. Yeah.
I did not attend the GSA meeting yesterday, so I have no report.
Okay. All right. I also attended the GSA board meeting yesterday here in this boardroom, which was October 2. And are there any public comments on our AB 1234 reports?
There is not.
Very good. We can move to item 13, director reports. Are there any director reports tonight?
I'll be brief. I just want to say that I stopped by the powwow this weekend and was pleasantly surprised to see SCV Water represented there and giving out great information to the huge crowd that was there and also offering to refill people's water bottles. So that's, I just want to say thank you to everybody who continues to offer their time to do that. Or, I mean, I know they're paid to be there, but it's great to see our staff being there and being a face in the community. And I hope as we continue to kind of partner with the city at these types of events, that it'll remind people like, oh, I'm gonna bring my reusable water bottle, because there'll be a chance to fill it there and reduce our use of single use plastic. So, I appreciate that we are part of that effort. So thank you.
One kind of last connected item to the GSA board meeting, Mr. Cole, could you say a few words about, did they already have the meeting on the Bouquet Creek with the county? Can you let the board know about that?
Yes, thank you, President Martin. There will be a meeting on Thursday night. Trying to remember what night it is tonight. That will be at the Grace Baptist Church from, I believe it's 6:30 to 8 o'clock. That'll be in regards to an update from the supervisor's office on the Bouquet Canyon Creek project.
Okay.
So if you're in the area and interested, you should attend. Thank you.
Very good. Thanks, Steve. Legal counsel has an answer to a question.
I'll just quickly say, yeah, we do in Section 18, related to whether we have the authority to generate power and whatnot. It's Section 18 B and C of our act. And we inside and outside the territory of the agency. However, we only have the authority to sell it if we're generating it wholesale to public or private entity or both. I'm happy to provide you with that afterwards.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Byrne. I think we are through item 13. We can move to item 14, director request for approval for event attendance. Are there any requests for approval of event attendance? Automatically in my head, it goes that way. You're starting to... seeing none. We have no requests for event attendance. Which brings us to item 15, adjournment. And I want to thank the board thank the staff, thank our consultants for the time spent on the Valencia study, and the item was passed tonight, and we can move forward with that. So with all, have a good evening. We are hereby adjourned.